Welcome to the Weekly Zoo for 9:12 p.m. Eastern Time on this nice and cool October day. Although it is mild tonight because we're going to have another warm front because, you know, climate change can't be real, right? It must be my imagination. It must be my adult mind versus my childhood mind. So I have a little bit of a added value bonus if I have real friends in my life. You have been subjected to a invite to go on my Zoom feed because I'm paying for the Zoom service, to have, jitter-free communications. So you're more than welcome to, log in with the credentials, and I didn't share the PIN to everybody on the world, so only those who know can get on the show. And those who don't know are left in the dark, like an aunt family member. Oh, just kidding. Not going to talk about that tonight. So tonight, the topic I'm wanting to do, a little monologue and the world's view with a warped lens. So I did start a bit late tonight. Like I said, actually, there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes. I mean, look at this. We're festive, and right now the lighting is a little bit off right now, but I can show you the lab, or we call it tier one. I never thought I was gonna do a Genius Bar. And I did. And so that's what is building for the last couple months. But that'll be a video in itself. I record and capture so much me, I can't even edit the stuff. So alrighty. So as many of you folks know, Black Monday was the day where the Dow Jones Industrial Average, or the DJIA, lost 22% of its value, which, I mean, many of you probably know the markets, on that day. But here's the things that people don't talk about. And I don't want to get too in the deeps here. 508 points was a lot, but it was really that percentage. And I know, I actually am the kind of guy that understands that not everybody gets the whole, percentage, and I find it a little bit irritating that when the markets went to decimals, they had to find a way to do fractions. And what do they do when they do it on the percentages? And they never show a company that's down 5 cents. No, it's better to say 1.2%. Good God. So Black Monday does not get talked a lot about. In fact, a lot of the deep-rooted history, I don't know if it was intentionally covered up or it was that traumatic for a number of years, but a lot of the information surrounding Black Monday was kind of buried. And part of that was, you might have heard the phrase that Black Monday became the largest bull market in history. And what that meant was, what those people mean by that is that the Dow never saw its lows after it went up. But remember, the Dow began in 87, just south of 2000, and then right before August, the market peaked in August of that year. It peaked at like 2700, I think, and then it went down. But what happened before Black Monday, which if I do my math here, 1917, so it would be 16. So Friday the 16th was where the Dow logged its worst day in point loss. 160 points, I believe, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong. So the Dow logged a really bad day, but I believe Mike Jensen from NBC News had filed a report for Nightly News that night, Friday before Black Monday, and he had to remind Tom Brokaw that it was a record point drop, but not percentage. Well, that would be an understatement within 48 hours. And there was a couple of different factors that was going against the Dow and the blue chips. The personal computing sector, which for all intents and purposes, you're a humble YouTuber and social media whore. basically, the PC industry really was invented in the mid-70s. It was a sector of itself. And even better than that, it was an economy of itself. I really do treat the PC industry a little bit different than, say, the other, or even the big iron companies like IBM, DEC, and the Seven Dwarfs, as it was called back in the time. And so, the PC, and so when you think of the PC, you're thinking about the Mets, you're thinking about Apple, you're thinking about Commodore, Atari, and those companies alike. And they were the first to kind of get out of the 70s recession, which was really bad, with Jimmy Carter's economic agenda that really didn't help. But Ronald Reagan's economics, you could make a case that it wasn't any angels either. So they kind of boomed in the start of the 80s, and I believe the Dow broke its, it was a record, but I don't remember. Bill Griffith had said, the guy on CNBC, the longtime CNBC anchor, he remembered the Dow closing on a record on a Friday. So that was like 82, I think, because it was 82 to 87, so 5 years, you know. Then the Dow crashed on a Monday. It was a good way to remember that kind of point of information. So the Dow went from 1,000 to about 2,700, I think, like I said, the August 87 high. And then you had that Friday drop, then the Monday fall. Now, remember, this is October 19th of that year. I was not even, I think it was I 7 months old about that time? Yeah. Right, so I was barely a baby. And the markets didn't have TVs. The trading floors in Midtown, the New York Stock Exchange, FNN, the Financial News Network, was not taken seriously for people watching it in the office. So, and I don't know, I think FNN had something like 20 million homes, which in the cable world was low. So, FNN was not in the radar, okay? The Wall Street Journal, remember this, back in 1987, did not publish a Saturday edition. That was like, what was it, 2002 or 3 or 4? Like, near the latter ends of the Dow Jones independent era, the independent era of the Dow Jones company. So, you know, news was, markets didn't trade on news. The markets didn't trade on same-day news either. So, in 1987, if you wanted to freak out on, like, a Gulf situation, a Soviet thing, it would take weeks to hit Wall Street. Okay, this was, again, up until, I wouldn't even go so far to say, maybe early in the early 2000s did the markets trade on same-day news. Or news that would move the markets. It was really like 15 years after the fact, or even 16, 17 for that matter. A lot of, you know, it's really interesting to even imagine that not even 34 years ago, the markets weren't trading on news, the same day news. So you gotta remember that at that time in 1987, which isn't that long ago. So the Monday morning happens, and everyone's just starting to see these prints on their computers to sell stocks, okay? So there was no rules governing what they call program trading. Now, program trading is just another word for computerized orders. So the people that had the most money were using computers. I think there were Sun workstations and servers at that time, because I believe the Sun workstations were common in the financial sector. Just literally selling buttons. So or not literally, but just scripts were, because what happened was when a company went, like a shares of GE went from like 42 to 41, that meant another trigger of a computer would sell X amount of shares at Y price, which then would, by the time it gets to the Y price, it's $37, and I'm making up the number, the prices, because, but you get the point. It was hitting every trigger in the Dow 30, and it just cascaded. Now, there's another little quirk. If you are a computer guy trading stocks, the New York Stock Exchange in 1987 would manually open up every stock. So, this is kind of antiquated now, but not the bullpen, but the trading post of the New York Stock Exchange, the guys that are in that post was a specialist. I'm going to use it in past tense because I think it doesn't work the way it works now. And the specialist is basically the auctioneer for about 150 stocks. So the New York Stock Exchange had, I don't know, 20 posts. I think it was less than 20. And they had, I don't know, five or six specialists in each post. Okay. So that they're basically, supervising the stocks. And how it worked in 1987 is you had a buy guy and a sell guy that would want to trade a bulk of shares. Now, this is another thing people forget too, that just because you wanted to, you had pool of people selling stock, okay, but the pool is not going to get that individual price. So if the guy wants to sell GE for 43 and a quarter, but another guy wants to sell it for a bit more, because you don't want to see GE go into complete, you don't want GE to crash. So if the specialist would literally look at his marketplace that's in front of him, like, let's say we'll just use five human beings, the traders, and he's hearing all these different things, and he's making a decision to make a call. So one of the things you hear about the old stock, the old fashioned New York Stock Exchange, was that the specialist was the guy that would determine the price for a stock. Because remember, you're trading a bunch of stocks, but you're not trading millions of shares at millions of instances. You have to, back in those days, you had to have a pool, and you had to make a decision. And what, sometimes the traders got screwed over, sometimes they made out. It depended on what that price, but he was going to make a decision for all these sale orders. GE is going to get down to 41 and a quarter. If you want 41 and 3/8, you're screwed. I'm not doing that kind of thing. I'm being a little bit simple for this, but the problem was the computer orders were just literally flooding the New York Stock Exchange, and it was so bad because back in those days, the traders were getting these little printouts, but they were getting stacks of these, and they couldn't trade with the traders, and the specialists could not make a market, and so they were just swamped. So that's why Disney couldn't open, Deck didn't open, and the current New York Stock Exchange trading schedule, 9:30 to 4 Eastern time, was, I think, just 2 years old at that point. So, you know, by 10 o'clock, it's, you know, midday. And remember, the markets in 1987, 34 years ago, was a completely different world. I mean, some of the elements of the New York Stock Exchange was still relevant in the late 90s. So you had to open up all these stocks. And sometimes you want to get a print until maybe 9:40. The first print of the first trade of a stock on the New York Stock Exchange, you probably want to get the print until maybe 9:45, which felt like eternity for those days, kids. I mean, literally. We're talking about a generation ago. I was literally born that same year. So, and remember, you know, a lot of places' stocks were delayed because, you know, the SEC had controls on the regulation. But what happened was the stocks were cascading down so fast. I don't even think in 1929 it was cascading so ridiculously. So you had all these sell orders, not to mention you got delays of quotes, because again, in 1987, to get the print on AT&T or any of the big blue chip companies, you were getting like a half day. To get it in real time today, again, it's within my lifetime has the markets changed. And I think a lot of people tend to forget that point of information, that 1987 in a lot of ways was more closer to 1929 than it was in the year 2000 in terms of information. There was some speed, but there was still, you know, that delay of information. However, the official scorekeeper, the stocks, the big mainframes did, they were able to log the stocks in real time. But the problem is a lot of people were still reliant on the LED wall board. It's, you know, known as the ticker for a lot of people. But that LED wall board was delayed 2 hours after the closing bell on the New York Stock Exchange. So some people that on the New York Stock Exchange were reliant on the ticker, but the ticker wasn't, it wasn't giving you a near real time, the blow by blow by this point. Another problem was that in 1987, again, 34 years ago to this day, games were, even though there was computer terminals with green screens and just plain old characters, one of the problems was that there's still paper. And in fact, it took nearly 2 weeks for people to even know where their position was on Black Monday. So by the end of October of that year, you know, going into November, you know, people didn't know where they were, if they were going to be solvent. Because remember, the markets, you know, the traders don't make a lot of money, believe it or not, between taxes and their investors. You know, they some had folded, some had to sell themselves to another group of traders, because really these people, and another thing back in the day, the New York Stock Exchange, a lot of the people were individual traders, you know, mom and pops. The brokerages, there's different, this is going to get really complex, but on the New York Stock Exchange, you know, you had these different oh God, I'm trying to think. You had the specialists, you had the traders, you had the floor brokers, but then you had people up in Midtown Manhattan that were other companies, but they were, you know, there were brokerages. And then you had the Merrill Lynches of the world, which for all intents and purposes basically bought stocks then resold them to the Main Street people. And that was how the system was. But back in 1987, some of these brokerages that were on the New York Stock Exchange were, you know, probably billion-dollar enterprises, but had like 20 people. So they were really like small businesses. And that was what it was like 34 years ago. But like right before the financial crisis, you know, you know, 12 and a half years ago or something, oh, it was a 12 or 13, I lost count of my math here. By 2008, a lot of the people that were on the New York Stock Exchange were wearing their corporate shirts. The people, you might have heard the phrase owning the seat on the New York Stock Exchange. It's like a license. Think of, because I think that's where the license in computing comes from. It came from that arrangement. You basically own the rights to trade on the floor. And back in the day, traders back in like the 20s, I think, would take an hour break on their seat that they paid to get on the floor. And in fact, that same year, in 1987, I think they sold a seat for like $2 million. I can't remember off the top of my head, but that was before the market fell. And so the you had all these like different stuff that was going on with the with the computers, the trades, and really it really got us into a recession. Now, for people like my mom, I'm a son of a fab worker that wore a bunny suit for 14 hours. It didn't impact her. She felt Reaganomics was doing all her great, stuff. But for a lot of people, it was the start of a recession. It went all the way up until the mid-90s. The Dow did hit 3,000 on an intraday basis in like the fall of 1990, but it didn't close above 3,000 until the following April of 1991. So, yeah, yay, 3,000 was supposed to hit 4 years before, but it took, but, you had the war in Iraq, the 1.0, if you want to call it that, and even at that point, when we went into war, the markets were not reacting on the news. It was like a week old, the markets would then make decisions between the human traders in Midtown and the specialists down in on Wall Street, where they would make those decisions like I talked about earlier. And then you had, the internet. Okay, so let me also tell you, too, the interest rates were the federal, back to October 87. The Federal Reserve the following day basically pumped money into Wall Street to the specialists, and they wanted the specialists to buy the stocks, because there's this literal expression at the time that the specialist or the auctioneer is the buyer of last resort, because you're never going to see Disney down to a penny or GE down to a dime, supposedly. So that was where the federal funds was supposed to do, is to go buy the stocks, but what happened was the markets just went down even further. Until a guy in Chicago, because there's a documentary on this, but on the 25th anniversary. But what happened was out in Chicago, at the Chicago Board, was it the CBOE, if I'm not mistaken, it's since been merged with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange as well as the CBOT, but I think it was the CBOE. A guy had credentials to go in the CBOE. He bought a put order for the S&P futures, which is a buy in the futures world. And basically, by that point, so goes Chicago, so goes back east to New York. And that's why the Dow went up on an intraday basis on October 20th. But on the 21st, the Dow went back down Thursday and went back up. And it was just a seesaw then. But the interest rates were cut, because they did rise the interest rates to choke off the stock market to kind of keep the flow of money. And this is one thing that what we're dealing with today, particularly in a post-COVID economy, if you want to call it that, it really goes back to 30 years of, I think we're going to probably see in the next 5 years. I do not want to be a doom and gloom. I do not trade stocks. I don't have any activity in it. And nor if I do, I wouldn't tell you what to do. But I will tell you, from seeing both an economic and a market view, they're so far apart. They're divided as well. And I think what's going to happen is the markets are going to take a huge dive. But at the same time, the money is going to probably get liquefied, which means you have money in your pocket. Because if you put money in the stocks, the money is in the pool. But when you sell a stock, you get that money. And so that's what's going to happen, possibly, I think, in the next few years. I don't think it's going to look good. But what happened in the 90s with the Fed Reserve, with the Feds kind of lowering interest. It wasn't bad as Japan, because Japan, their economy crumbled. Like, I would go so far to say a tsunami hit the markets. Because remember, the Nikkei 225 started in the 1980s at 10,000. It spiked to 40,000 before it went back down. And really, the Nikkei kind of mirrors the Dow 30. And I don't think I'll ever see the Nikkei at those levels. And the Japan economy, I haven't really done a lot of research before, but I bet you anything, low interest rates was like free money for the finance, the stock markets. But we did a similar thing too. And what happened was, on the left coast, you had these venture capital firms. Okay, this is how Apple was financed. I will not say funded. I don't like that word, because if you're a company, your purpose is to make money, not to be donated seed money. There is seed money, but I'm not going to go over this, over that details. The way that Silicon Valley works was there's a concentrated wealth amongst certain venture capitalists. And again, I always say this, Alexander Graham Bell did not go to a VC firm to market his idea that he ripped from Elijah Gray. So there's now you know how my opinions on who invented the phone. You know, I believe it was Gray. That's from what I research. It just for probability logic and all that. And Alexander Graham Bell was more of a marketer. But of course, the things history does not repeat itself in terms of revisions of history. But that's how I look at it. Alexander Graham Bell or the guys from Western Electric didn't get venture capital funding, but and these companies lasted for a century. But VC firms started to hoard money because you had low interest rates. You had companies, you know, giving Apple, Next, the entire San Francisco Bay Area between the PC companies and then later the dot-com companies were basically getting private money that wasn't in the public markets. Like, I'm talking about the actual monetary system. And what I mean by this is when you have low interest rates and these venture capitals burying this money, and they're hoarding this cash. All the money that the Fed prints is like not literally stored in bunkers on the left coast, but in a way it is. And so this money has been, you know, accruing. And then you have companies like Google, Facebook, and alike, you know, going public, so then the money starts to get liquefied. But the people that had the largest stake in these companies, because remember, Google had, what was it, 200 employees in the really early years, so they had, like, everyone had a piece in Google. But when it went public on the NASDAQ in 2004, that money became liquid, meaning that they could put that money in their pocket. And of course, what are they going to do? They're not going to keep it in the markets. They want it. So that's why you had the guy in the cafeteria getting crapples of money. Sergey and the gang got money as well. And so you started seeing this wealth getting worse. In fact, it started when the PC was invented in the late 70s. You started to see a wealth, a departure of wealth. Because back in the, prior to the 70s, the South Bay of San Francisco was mostly just defense contractors and manufacturing. And a lot of that disappeared. There was still manufacturing. Like, Apple was making Macs, but I got to tell you here, Macintoshes made Macintoshes. Little known fact. So a lot of jobs were getting displaced by the 70s. And in the 80s, it got hung over in the 90s, and the people that were working in Silicon Valley were coders, people that were going into an office in a cube farm writing strings of code. And how many people of, you know, blue-collar workers knew how to write code? It was hard to do, and these companies wanted to make money, because, of course, going back to this idea that, you know, there's this fiduciary responsibility to make money. And so as a result, this wealth just with the dot-com bubble growing, then bursting, which basically decimated the left coast in terms of jobs and all that. I mean, that recession was pretty bad. It didn't hit every industry, but it did hit certain areas really hard 21 years ago, actually. And then you had another boom Well, that was basically all hedge. Remember, hedge markets, people just betting on it. Okay, and you can go into credit default swaps, and I'm not going to go in that because that's really going to, it's going outside the scope of tonight's topic. But what happened at that point was you had just basically people, this concentration of wealth was, just accruing, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And I think what was really unfortunate was the this it's something that doesn't get talked a lot about because A, people wanted to just forget it, rewrite history, or just not want to talk about this. But another thing that did come out when Steve Jobs passed away, the producers of Triumph of the Nerds that ran on PBS in the summer of '96 and Channel 4 in the UK, I think like the early '95, mid '95, because the show was actually not, it was produced the year before, and they were going to do a sequel in the late '90s, but they apparently lost all the Betacam tapes. With the 125 people that they interviewed, roughly an hour for each of the people. Steve Jobs was, I believe, the guy that appeared most in that three-part series. But somebody at in the production crew dubbed it to VHS, I think, something like that. 'Cause it was a low-quality tape, and they had it in their garage, literally. I think it was a guy on the other side of the pond. It's unclear. So that was it, the lost tape that cringingly was came out of the woodwork. And I believe he did some on camera stuff. He could have just let it be, 60 minutes of raw tape, which I'm a sucker for. But one of the things in that Breath received Jobs said he hired the wrong guy, which captivated everybody. I mean, even I, being a naive than usual 9-year-old, stopped what he was doing when he said that. Seriously, I swear to God. But in that same breath, that was cut out, he talked about why John Sculley did what he did. And what he said was that the PC sector basically peaked in the same year the Macintosh came out. That same year, January 1984. I think it ended the near the end of that year, but still. He said something along the lines that Steve Jobs, he felt that he was the fall guy because someone had to blame somebody for a division that was eating up the revenues on the Apple II. And it makes sense because remember, if you looked at the Dow, if it peaked, I think it was, if it was, did I say 1982 earlier? So minus 5, you get to 77, right? And that was the year of the Apple II. So again, the PC industry kind of was got us out of the recession first in, first out. He didn't say all that stuff, but you can read between the lines of what he said about that, and that's kind of what happened. And so he Jobs was really like nonchalant and calm about it, believe it or not. And anyways, and that's what happened. And it is something that I think we should talk about. I think we should talk about Black Monday, because I think it's an underrated subject because in 13 years, the markets went back, or less than 13 years, because the late 1999, the Nasdaq was it gained like 87% year over year because it was below 2,000. It was close to 5,000 by the end of 1999. And so, and even the Nasdaq had a rough day too. The Nasdaq was called the over-the-counter markets because it was considered to be a shady, for the nerds of the markets, because that's where a lot of the tech companies came in. And Apple really had a rough day. I forget how much Apple lost that day, but The NASDAQ really, it was a rough day. The NASDAQ stock market, just to kind of give you guys some historical perspective, if you're much younger than me, the NASDAQ, was historically known for trucking companies, airlines, when there was more regional companies, the technology companies, some TV groups, I think Lin TV Group, LIN, which is now, been absorbed by Nexstar, but Lin Home Shopping Network was a NASDAQ company. A bunch of odds and ends companies. Staples, a lot of the hip retail brands, Staples, Starbucks, have been on the NASDAQ from the beginning. Some companies like Texas Instruments moved over to the NASDAQ in recent years, but that was the makeup of the NASDAQ. NASDAQ was a little bit more diverse back in 87 as opposed to 1999 and 2000, where all the dot-coms were in. The NASDAQ had a rough day in terms of handling sellers as well, because one of the advantages of the NASDAQ at the time in 34 years ago was people would pick up their telephone and call their broker, and they were able to sell stocks through the phone and have direct market access to direct markets, which unfortunately those people that wanted to sell 1,000 shares of Lin or Home Shopping Network or Apple was holding up the institutional, and there were institutional shareholders back in the day, and the NASDAQ had to put the small order execution system to sell any stock that was below 1,000 shares to be executed automatically. And I believe at that time that same year the NASDAQ had Macintosh 2 workstations. That was the I thought it was the Macintosh, I could be wrong. I know the next gen was on Windows NT, but so these were, that was the official computer where they would put in the orders. In fact, in a way, another thing a lot of people won't forget or won't know, the NASDAQ was a humanized market without the trading floor. People think it's all computers. It was not all computers. And so that's just kind of how it was at that time. And I think it's just good to kind of remind people that, there, it was a generation ago, and we had a president that kind of said, was the cheerleader for the markets. Not the way that Donald Trump would have done in the recent years, but there was all this like free markets. And then not to mention, was it, when did Wall Street come out, the film? Was it Thanksgiving or Christmas? I forget. But it was not even less than 2 months. The film that was, literally took place at the New York Stock Exchange. I think the film's storyline took place in 1985. It was not, there wasn't a crash in the film, but it was basically characterizing, put a character of Ivan Boesky, I think. But this character is played by Michael Douglas, said greed, for a lack of a better word, it's good. Now, I gotta remind you again, that was a fictional character played by Michael Douglas. And what was the character's name again? I'm blanking on it. I forgot. It'll probably come up to me in a moment, but it was a fictional character. And people, Gordon Gekko, jeez, how the hell can I forget that? Gordon Gekko is not a real man. It was played by freaking Michael Douglas. And people, for whatever fucking reason, they worshipped this guy who was in a freaking film after Black Monday, who said that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. And people just hung on to that. I'm not saying that greed is good, but just, but the type of guy that Michael Douglas played, the guy that wrote the film, was a diehard liberal, and against this kind of stuff. But people forget about that too. They just, people have like either short, I think Americans have a short retention span. So that was at about 50 minutes of just yapping about the markets. And for people that think, oh, the Wall Street, so it's for those conservative capitalist types. I just say that our wealth is based in the financial markets. Let's put it this way. We have the Federal Reserve to give us some currency. And the marketplace, the stock markets, the futures, whatever, is a place to either expand it or create a marketplace for people to have money. Whether it's your pension funds, your retirement funds, your place, your nest egg, if you want to go on a vacation halfway around the world, that's what the purpose of the stock market is. What I find the problem is the markets have been raped and fucked over by the people that you see on Fast Money, particularly the one that's on 12 noon, not the 5 o'clock people. 5 o'clock people are they're day traders, you know, but they're not fucking with the markets. And what I mean by that is that they'll throw their money in the equities, pump and dump them, you know, buy them at the high, sell them at the low, probably within a few minutes, because I don't want to get into high frequency trading, but that's how these people use it. They're using the stock market as kind of like a quick walker in a matter of a nanosecond. So again, within 20 something years, the markets where it would take you a couple of weeks to pump and dump Apple, take an Apple, to make money off of Apple in the futures markets in Chicago, and use it in the equities on the Nasdaq, took weeks or maybe even a month. I don't know for sure because I don't have practical knowledge. I was not even alive. Was barely alive at that time. But people are just using the markets now, like today. If you want to screw Apple in terms of the futures and equities, that could take you a matter of like that, a nanosecond. So, not to mention these algorithms where they write code to monitor the wires, the news wires, and the stocks. It's all interconnected. And the brokerages like Goldman Merrill, oh God, I'm forgetting my big banks off the top of my head. A lot of them have disappeared after the financial crisis. Layman, I can use historical context and stuff like that. But a lot of these brokerages are manned by computers. Somebody writes code, and then it's pumping and dumping through batch files. It's different than it was on Black Monday because the batch files would send a print or fax an order to the NYSE, and then be hand delivered, and that's when they know when to pump and or dump the stock or pump it for that matter. But these computer systems were actually there were warning signs, and some of these people were working on the street, like Jim Cramer has been, you know, had mentioned this. Ron Insano was trying to get into television, not to cover financial news, and he had seen signs where the Dow was going up way too fast. We're talking like minutes, not like days, where the Dow would go up 3%, down 3 within you know, a half an hour, which again at that time felt like a tourney, but that's how the markets moved. It was literally moving minute to minute at much slower scale, but nowadays the Dow could go up and down 900 points within minutes. It's kind of funny that my birthday falls on the two, I believe it was last March and March of 2021, because that was the downturn got worse as the year turned. And I remember going to the Cheesecake Factory with my mom in Middlesex County, and we're, you know, we're not at the bar, but we can see it. You know, I don't freak out on the markets. The markets really freak me out. I observe it, and it's like, on one hand, you're just seeing the market. This is with the COVID panic, obviously, panic selling on COVID, and you're just seeing like the Dow like literally go down 100 100 points in like a matter of minutes. Now, yeah, I understand the Dow's at 22,000 or 30, was it? I think it was at 20,000 at the time. You know, crossed 30,000, you know, late last year. And that's another thing, too. I don't really get into the whole COVID economy and how these billionaires made money. The reason why they made their billions was because everyone was cooped up at home for the rightful reasons for some, in some locales. And, you know, Jeffrey Bezos is the billionaire because he, you know, got the financing for his company at very low interest rates. So the value of the dollar is not relevant to the dollar for the rest of us, basically. I mean, if the interest rates were a little bit higher, Jeffrey Bezos would still be a zillionaire. You know, I'm old enough to remember companies were worth the billions, and the high executives were worth millions, and the rest of us were 100,000 years or 1,000 years or 100 years. Okay? I've been old enough to see that change drastically. Now, don't call me a liberal moonbat, but this, I'm for a capitalistic market, but the last 15, 20 years, it's an uber capitalism market. I'm not talking about the ride healing up. I'm talking about this extreme capitalistic system where it's only the chosen people that can make billions and trillions of pennies if you look at money that way. And they kind of fucked the rest of us because of something that happened 34 years ago. It really did start on the 6th, right, so right, I did it right, I keep forgetting it's 38, right, on the 16th of 1987, because you really gotta count that Friday was like the warning sign, okay, because the markets were already going down from its August high, the record high, and then it just went on a precipice the following Monday, and it just got worse and worse and worse, and, but at that time, it felt like, you know, apocalypse was going to happen. And so it's important to understand all that people are. And there was, I think, some scars. I mean, there was some fear amongst the people that, you know, were running these large value enterprises. They were really like mom and pop shops. And that's something that people forget. Well, yeah, they're worth a lot of money on paper, but it wasn't liquid. Like Amazon, the FANG companies, it's on paper, but it's also in value too, part of it too. And I don't like growth companies. I don't like, because I'm now old enough to know how it works and how it didn't change, how it was a different back in the 90s in the year 2000. And I don't like it because I don't think people on the left coast really understood that or maybe didn't realize that these growth companies were going to become monsters. It's one of the reasons why I don't really give Google money. I don't use Amazon and I use Apple, but I don't pay a lot of, I'm not an Apple customer, an active customer, and it's, you know, with Apple getting rid of a lot of things, they have trillions of, or not trillions, billions, but hey, they got trillions of pennies and dimes. That's how I look at it. They got more money than God would ever dream of between these five companies, and whoever came up with the acronym of the five companies should be ashamed of themselves, because he or she created a bubble. And that's going to be the next big thing. Now, I hope and pray it's an orderly decline. It's like blowing a balloon. You put it. Okay, I'm old enough to remember because I was in special ed in the 90s where we had people with sensory issues. And the way they would pop a balloon for like a birthday, they would put scotch tape and put a push pin and then have it slowly deflate to when it caused people with sensory overload issues. That's what I hope with the markets, because I would probably freak the fuck out if we see the Dow. I understand there are circuit breakers, but there's no trading curbs. Because that was the other thing. In 1988, the New York Stock Exchange added two rules, circuit breakers, which was rarely used, but the commonly used practice for roughly 20 years was the trading curbs, which meant all computer orders had to be halted when the Dow would go up or down 2%. So the Dow, at all times, from like 1988 to about, I think, 2007. And I remember that the rule, they dumped the rules on like a Friday. I remember seeing it on CNBC Flash on the lower third. And I'm like, oh, that's a big story. They was reporting on it. And I don't think CNBC actually reported it on their air. They just flashed it on the screen because they got rid of the rule. And that's the reason why they got rid of the rule was because virtually everything was automated. And the only way you could stop a market from completely losing it was to do individual circuit breakers at short intervals, because the computers eventually did take part of the New York Stock Exchange and the Nasdaq, for that matter, as well. And I for one, I'm not a Bud Fox. Is that his name in Wall Street? God, I haven't watched that film in a while. But I'm not a guy that I like capitalistic systems, but I don't believe in that capitalism. The word capitalism is such a dirty word, you can't even say it, even if you believe in rational markets, or it's mostly defined by the companies. The capitalism in 2021 means the five gazillionaires and the five big companies and the venture capital firms. That's they want to just do whatever the hell they want with the money. Facebook has all the money in the world to finance content moderators. Google as well. Apple could make X serves, better X serves. Apple could make, desk high class Macs, but they don't do that because it's too much money. But yet they got all this money piled up. I don't really think Apple getting into the TV business or the streaming business was really smart. I mean, it's a technology company. Same with Amazon. And, I just think these companies got so big, and yet they still think small because I think they need to think small. But they totally are missing out on what they're doing to society. And another thing back in the 80s was there's a crack epidemic, right? People went raw drugs. And this happened in the Bay Area. The homeless issue goes as far back as the 70s with Nixon's wacky agendas fixing with an invention of the BC. And then you're seeing it repeat itself and no one's doing anything about it. They just people want money. Okay, well, what are you going to do with the money? So I'm a little bit liberal when it comes to the economics. I don't believe that, socialism is the solution to the answer. But socialistic is different. And I think UBI, the universal basic income, is, I think, would help a lot of Americans, because a lot of people are getting paid a lot of money, and you're also not only not getting taxed hard. Lowering the taxes isn't going to fix the problem, because again, who's going to benefit more? The big FANG type of companies. So it's not going to go to the little people. And the little people that felt like got it was an Easter Bunny belief. Sorry. And I understand the markets, okay? A lot of people, when you watch Fox Business, I know I'm pissing on the searchlight again. A lot of the people that are on Fox Business care about the economy. They don't care about the stocks. But wait, if you're for the economy, you should understand how the stock market works. And the markets. The markets are a big part of capitalism. And all they care about is just low taxes and low spending on the Fed. I'm not an economic guy. I'm really a nerd when it comes to the markets. And when I cannot find in the Wall Street Journal the advancing and declining issues on the New York Stock Exchange and the Nasdaq and the Amex, that's what pisses me off about the markets. Like, I can't get, it's hard for me to go online and find all the stuff that was easy that seems you would flash full screen on during the day. And they say, well, you could go online. You know what I do sometimes when I do the news here for the news station? I'll go up bigcharts.com. That's still around. That looks like you're in the year 2001, which is a good thing because a little site is good, especially when you want to get market information on the 25 and 55 market updates. And I like data. I like news. I like being informed. That's my passion. And the content out there is all like worshiping gospel. Like, we gotta believe in free markets, free market capitalism, low taxes, low spending. That's gonna fix everything. No, it doesn't. All right, so we're gonna have love and relationships hour. If anybody's on Zoom, please, you know how to contact me for once. For those who have access to, you could get on to me. I'm paying a lot for this service. So, for God's sakes alive, please help me up on the comments. I'm giving you the backdoor access. I'm giving you keys to the jungle here. Literally, that was a pun. I didn't even realize that that was no pun intended. So we're gonna take a break, take some calls, because I'm probably gonna talk. We're probably gonna be here till 11. It's gonna think tomorrow. I'll have to wake up early. So I already had my 3 o'clock Zoom tonight. It's normally like every other Wednesday, so I'll have to wake up every morning. But the reason why I wake up early, I go on an alarm so I could. It's that's how I keep track of it, even if my scheduled events is later in the day. And literally, my iPhone today fell off the desk like an alarm clock, like a little. It was like a scene of the movie. Just the only difference was my iPhone. Unfortunately, it was okay. It hit my chair mat. It was no collateral damage. But thought that was kind of cute. All right, we'll take a break. And hope you. I wish I had the Jim Cramer soundboard on me. But if you want to bitch about anything, this is the show. I'm like your therapist. I'm your intellectual therapist. So come back. You know where to find me, bitches. We'll be back.